Okay. Thank you for the opportunity. I'm Andrew Perota. I'm from the University of Kansas. Wear a variety of hats there. But my main clinical interest is airway management. A bit of background. A couple years ago, I got interested in the way we're teaching airway. And I thought a lot of it was the anatomy deficiency. So like, you know, an intern's intubating and they don't really know what they're looking for. My own experience was I goosed my first two patients because I didn't know what the esophagus was compared to the glottis. So we're building a repository of videos now. We have about 400 of these. This is just the tip of the iceberg. Eventually, I'm going to try to make this free and open access for everybody. So if you're interested, send me an email. I can talk offline with you. But hopefully, this is just an example, but there should be all this available to your learners in the future as well. So the entire lecture is just series. So, and that's the way we're going to set this all up. Is just a series of videos and then just kind of my narration. Any questions, please just shout out. So first is just kind of bread and butter. These are all just kind of visual triggers for me. So Bougie, this is a CMAC Stores Mac 3 or Mac 4. Just nice, easy, you know, intro to our lecture here. So midline approach, displacing the tongue here. Remember now the median glossoepiglottic ligament, which is that midline structure. Now we've rename the median molecular fold with Dr. Driver and Dr. Levitan. But, you know, this is good. CL2A view, you know, the what you want. This is a little bit of, like, kind of pinch of the vocal cords, but nice Bougie passage, really smooth. You can imagine as the lecture goes, it's not going to all be this easy. But just this is exactly what I try to teach, which is, like, the midline approach, maintain the blade in the vallecula, displace the epiglottis, watch the Bougie or the malleable stylet or whatever go in and then the tube pass, and just super high yield there. This is something I've, a phenomenon I see. So I review all the videos and we de-identify all them. But so there's no patient information, starts at the teeth, ends at the teeth. But I see a lot of this, which is, I don't know if you all experience this when you're helping your residents or intubating yourself, but there's kind of a sundowning effect. So you have nice Bougie passage and then you know, you're asking RT or your nurse or your colleague to get you an endotracheal tube, and, you know, it just kind of starts disengaging. So the laryngoscope and the vallecula starts disengaging, and you kind of, you know, just starts losing that view a little bit. It's almost like that sundowning. It's a little perilous, though, because, you know, it's better to have that full view of the glottis when you're intubating. This was me a couple weeks ago. There's a new device that I like. I have no endorsement with them, but it's called the Through the Cords. It's an articulating Bougie. Very interesting device. So it's super angulated Bougie with a pistol grip. And then when you squeeze the pistol, it straightens out. And then it can actually go posteriorly too. So I probably should have waited a little longer. This was 60 seconds after rock, but super sick patient, desatting despite high flow nasal cannula, apneic oxygenation. You can see it's got this, you're really in control of the Bougie. So it straightens and then you release the trigger and it goes anteriorly. I really think when it's about $100 a pop, I think when they make it less expensive, this is going to be a pretty powerful device. This speaks to the next phase of emergency airway management, which I think will be dual provider, which is going to be, you know, you've got a laryngoscope in, and then your colleague has a articulating or a disposable bronchoscope, and so you're looking at the glottis in two ways, but you can actually manipulate as you go rather than the static devices of malleable stylet, Bougie. So probably the future here. On to the decompensating patients. So I teach a lot on cardiac arrest management. This is a really good one. As a senior resident, maybe 2 or 3 months ago, the student was helping. You'll see a kind of second Ducanto comes in, which I don't know how helpful that was. But what was good about this was the student or the resident stayed high in the airway. So it's like I'm always teaching rather than that scooping, lifting motion where you kind of scoop in the posterior oropharynx to stay super anterior, so you're sliding along the tongue and then sliding down into the posterior oropharynx into the vallecula. So you never really got into trouble with secretions. I mean, you can imagine this airway could have turned into not an incredibly successful one that I presented at a conference. You know, these are the ones that can become super difficult, become surgical, become failed. But he stayed super high in the airway, suction, angulated blade, angulated stylet, a little bit of trouble passing the tube once he's in. I know many of you have experienced this too, where you have to kind of engage the glottis with the angulated stylet and then take stylet out and then maneuver the tube into place. So, you know, the in the airway sphere, we say angulated blades make laryngoscopy easy and tube passage difficult, which I think that illustrates. But this is a shout out to Dr. Eric Lauren at UC Davis. So he and I are fairly synergistic. So we were playing around with the idea, and he presented to me, you know, supraglottics, there's an argument that maybe supraglottics shouldn't even come out until you have ROSC. So he was like, well, but I'm like, well, I want to intubate, you know, and we kind of played with that, and it's like, well, why don't you just leave the supraglottic in place until you're ready to intubate? So this is an eye gel, and the blade is going anterior to the eye gel, and my resident was like, there's no way there's enough room, and I said, let's just try it. And so here's your vlecula, or excuse me, your epiglottis, and the eye gel is engaging the whole time, so it's like we're ventilating and oxygenating. Chest compressions are ongoing, like while we're suctioning, making sure our view is good. We're kind of getting into the vlecula, engaging the median vlecular fold. Bam, there's glottis. And look at this, the eye gel is still in place the whole time. So you're ventilating, oxygenating the whole time. We actually pulled the eye gel for this case and then intubated. But the next phase, and maybe next year I can present to you all, that Eric and I have been talking about is don't even take the eye gel out at any point. So you just leave the eye gel in, you know, really anterior approach. And then you're essentially passing your bougie or stylet tube, and when your tube is in place, then you remove your eye gel, which, you know, so you'd essentially have a period of 0 seconds or a very brief period where there's no oxygenation or ventilation. This also speaks to something that I'm working on, which is essentially apneic oxygenation in all patients, including cardiac arrest patients, so it's kind of beyond today. Nice, gross coffee ground emesis airway here for everyone eating. So this one's one of the grosser ones. I'll tell you, the last airway video is the grossest. But this is a crowd pleaser with my students. So Ducanto catheter coming in, really nice. It's kind of right lateral here. You know, not really optimal laryngoscopy yet, but the good thing is this resident is staying high again. So it's like they're not scooping into that. You know, the commentary about VL is that it's always failing with secretions. I would challenge that. It fails with secretions when you're not leading with suction and you're dipping into the posterior structure. So if you stay anterior, the secretions will pool posteriorly for you and you can stay away from it with your VL, which is super interesting and helpful. So angulated blade, angulated stylet, really never got involved in the secretions posteriorly. Again, you know, challenging airway that became pretty straightforward. Really not optimal laryngoscopy, kind of left lateral off midline, but still worked okay. This one's super interesting. So everything's going fine. Well, it's a cardiac arrest, so not everything's going fine. But, you know, but midline approach, CMAC blade, stores blade. And then I talked to the providers after this, kind of early pass with the bougie, but then is that halibut? Is that, who knows what that is? So they're trying to pass the bougie, and then it's this, like, oh, wait a second. Now, I actually think the problem with the first pass was that it was on the lateral side of the vocal cord. But look, I mean, in a cardiac arrest during compressions, like, I don't know what that is. So there's kind of a interesting, valiant attempt to suction that clear, because I think in talking to them, they thought it was like a piece of fish or something. Naturally, like a lot of our patients, we didn't know anything about this person. So continued attempt to suction, but then it became evident that this was just a part of that person and probably wasn't going to clear. This was an intern with one of our really great attendings, but it was pretty entertaining, like kind of doing the review of this. But you can see it's like, okay, this is tissue, it's bleeding now, so let's try the bougie again. And interestingly, it gets passed. And so retrospectively, this patient died, unfortunately, but I think this was a vocal cord polyp or cyst. Some of my favorite burns were a burn center. This one was an explosion. So this patient was something terrible, you know, in rural Kansas. I don't know exactly what it was, maybe some untoward activity. But their house exploded, or the basement exploded, so presumably something very flammable. Interestingly, though, most of the tissue is spared, but then the glottis is just painted with soot, which I thought was really interesting. Actually, the airway itself is not super challenging. This was a Macca's Miller, you know, using that Mac blade, displacing the epiglottis anteriorly rather than engaging the vallecula. This is my favorite burn one because there's such a weirdly demarcated, like, avulsed uvula. Look at this. Isn't that strange? It just like burned the tip off the uvula. The other interesting thing about this is the provider said that, you know, when you're in, you can kind of slide along the soft tissue. They couldn't. There was this weird kind of sticky friction, which presumably was the tissue was burned severely enough that it you know, it was more adherent than allowed them to move. So they were having trouble engaging into the vallecula. This would be a case where I think Mackes Miller is right, which they did. I think that was an appropriate move, a little bit off midline. But again, just super painted soot there. But this one, you know, so severe in the soft tissue surrounding the structures. For those of you who have not, I haven't met, I love the bougie. I think this would have been a better pass initially with bougie. But still maintaining that glottic view, you know, kind of struggling with it, but getting the malleable stylet and tracheal tube passed. This position right there, bam, freeze that for like a second. That's why I don't like the malleable stylet, because you lose glottic view for about a second or two. The bougie asks less of you, is what I tell my residents. This is not an MRI. It's just, this reminds me to say that this is a stenotic airway. This is my worst burn recently. So this was found down. Tissue is just fried. You can see it's kind of like there's a bunch of pallor. And there's an argument between Byrne and our team about whether the patient need to be intubated. And retrospectively, 100%, this patient need to be intubated. So you can see all the area epiglottic folds, the retinoids, everything is swollen. But then this is truly paralyzed tissue or paralyzed glottis, and the cords are narrow. Like this is, the tube hangs up and probably a little bit on the tracheal rings, but like genuinely, I've watched this video 50 times. I think that was a closing airway. I think those cords were coming together and that was going to evolve into a unintubatable from above. So I think it's appropriate when, you know, you're hearing stridor kind of thing, you need to move that forward and intubate the patient. My solo peds case, these, essentially all of these are from our last year. So again, tip of the iceberg, if you get interested in this, we have so many more videos, but this was a peds case that was recorded status. Miller blade, midline approach, but then kind of falls off right lateral. Very common, you know, trying to sweep the tongue. When you really don't need to do that with VL very commonly, especially with a kid. So you can see epiglottis is kind of pinned, and then okay view of the airway, not great. Again, I probably would have optimized my laryngoscopy first, but it's 402, you can see going in there. Still very good. I mean, super high pressure, one of our chief residents. I put this in here because I think there was a little bit left to be desired on the time for paralysis. So this was a iatrogenic, my own iatrogenic CO2 narcosis, which is not a super flattering story. I left a patient on oxygen for like 5 hours and came back and their PCO2 was greater than 130. But you can see the cords are still kind of quivering. So like a big teaching point for my residents, probably not huge deal, but there can be some laryngeal trauma associated with that. So like remember when you're using rock, which I would argue is much superior to sucks, give it plenty of time. So I used to wait 60 seconds. I now actually wait 75 seconds. Bagging or high flow nasal cannula plus non-rebreather during the apneic phase. One of my favorites here, alcoholic patient coming in and essentially progressive liver failure. Billy was 28, and my only video of a jaundiced airway, which I've never seen in my career. Right. It's just crazy. One of my fellow attendings intubated this patient, so I gave him grief because he nicked the lip, and so there's blood on the intracheal tube. So I tell him, I present your case and tell audiences that you hit the lip with your laryngoscope. But very bizarre case. The guy was, you know, these cases, he was like glowing. You know, just like a highlighter, his skin, and then his glottis was even jaundiced. This case we published in West Journal just as a case study. Really interesting, flash pulmonary edema, came from CT, was getting like a CT. And so pulmonary edema kind of dives in with the video laryngoscope. Fortunately, it scatters, but then it clears. This, I give my partner a little grief because there was using a yank hour instead of a Ducanto, which I think there's a lot of layers there. The Ducanto is superior. But you can see, trying to get in, the pulmonary edema is so profound that they can't even intubate before it reaccumulates in the airway. So this is a good example of the parking thing Dr. Ducanto talks about, salad, where you park that suction catheter and it gives you that little extra time. Naturally, the Bougie saves the day, so that's my, you know, another little plug for Bougies. Another pulmonary edema case, really interesting. So this guy was on heated high flow as an aptic oxygenation device, still desatted. But the, like, you can see this, it's just wild. Like, look at the, it's just bubbling hyperoxygenated blood. And just, again, it's just flowing out of the glottis. You're trying to clear it. You can clearly see epiglottis. Clear, there's the cords. You know, you've got it for 2 seconds, and then they disappear again. This was one of my chiefs, again, a little bit. I probably would have parked a suction catheter. He kind of just went for it and then told me about it retrospectively. And he was like, I had this great airway. And I was like, and then I was kind of, you know, watching like, oh, God, it was great, but it could have been something else. But interestingly, you know this is in. You're like, this is not, I'm not confident right now. But then you'll see there's kind of a suction event, almost like the pulmonary edema like comes back into the glottis, and you can see it kind of clears out. Might have already passed that part of the video, but it's, patient actually did okay. So just profound. But again, this is what speaks to the power of like apneic oxygenation. So this patient did desat, but they didn't desat profoundly. Like, so, you know, this wasn't a failed airway. It was profoundly difficult, but it was still successful. So I'm always harping on my residents about preparation. So the line I use that they now make fun of me for is, procedural success is directly proportional to setup. And that's how we've been approaching airway. I want to comment on COVID cases. I have a couple of these. So when in March of 2020, I know there was some question about like glottic narrowing. This was a COVID and aspiration pneumonia. But I'm pretty convinced after looking at some videos that it is actually just periglottic inflammation. So there was some question initially of like, do we need to downsize tubes to get into these airways? But I don't think so. So if you look at this, so there's a little bit of struggle getting up and engaging the vallecula, but nice slow, still nice slow approach. But see, midline approach good, little bit right lateral. But you'll see there's kind of, see that, like it looks narrow. It looks like you need to have like a 6.5 tube or something to go in there, but you don't. And then it just slides in. Like I got approached kind of by a variety of parties about this. So I started looking at the videos very closely. This one's even better. And I definitely want to encourage you all as like when you see this, if you're intubating a COVID-positive patient, I think still go with the 7.5 or an 8.0. Like, look how narrow that looks. And you think it's going to be trouble passing it, but I think it's just periglottic swelling. It's not the actual glottis in the cords itself. This is an 8.0 tube, you can see. So kind of interesting. Very badly traumatized assault case. Nice, slow laryngoscopy, and you see that leading with the suction catheter, so progressive laryngoscopy, so suction, laryngoscope, back and forth, really, you know, just staying anterior and clearing the secretions. A little bit right lateral, like so many are. This, I mean, I'm telling you, we have 400 videos now, so many are like this. They're right lateral because people are still trying to sweep the tongue like you're doing DL, which is less necessary when you're doing VL. But this is a good example of, and then we kind of are like, well, that's acceptable, I'll just stick with that. But I encourage everybody, you know, this is a tendency, all these tendencies I'm starting to see as I review all these videos, going midline if you can. This one is crazy. So this was like 3 weeks ago or 5 weeks ago or something. So trauma, GlideScope, really like kind of oblique and elongated epiglottis, not optimal view. This was a little cringeworthy, so prepare yourself. So a little bit of sundowning, like we said, it's right lateral. It's not actually midline, but not bad, you know. And then starts sundowning, you're losing that view, and then kind of a hopeful pass. You know, this is how I used to intubate, you know, with a kind of a hope springs eternal attitude. Definitely not in, as you can see, so that's esophageal, but they recognized it and they hung in there, which is really good, complimenting the team there. But, you know, a lot of this, the issue is a laryngoscopy, so they're not really where they need to be. So, you know, slow down, take a deep breath, apneic oxygenation, and re-engage. Interestingly, this is why this case is interesting, is, again, it was like, oh, whew, we're in. Well, not quite. I got asked to review this case because It didn't go as planned. And so this speaks to the, you know, we all get kind of that sense that we need to hurry through the airway, but really if you have good pre-oxygenation, good apneic oxygenation, you know, you've got a lot of time. There's a lot of safe apnea time. And so it's like slow down, make sure you're in. And then the big thing is when you are intubating, I tell my residents all the time, like watch the tube pass through the cords. And you can often even see the balloon inflate beyond distal to the glottis. So fortunately, patient did okay, able to reassess, deflate the tube, and then advance the tube a little bit more. And still, I think it was shallow, a little shallow. But, you know, they pushed it down in kind of finally. So interesting case. All of these, they're fun to review. Okay, that's this year's. And then I wanted to show a couple, like, all-time greats, which are just wild. This is a subglottic stenosis, which is definitely, it's just profound. So one of my partners intubating, this was not known. This was the first time this subglottic stenosis was discovered. You can see, it doesn't look that bad. You're like, oh, well, you know, a little pink. I'm just going to try. So they, you know, came in with an 8-0 endotracheal tube. This is like a 2-minute or 2.5-minute airway, so hang in there, but it's worth the wait. So that doesn't go, so let's try a bougie. Hanging up on the subglottic stenosis, and kind of concern building, as you can imagine. So kind of, this is interesting, kind of twisting the bougie in, and I think lacerating the vocal cord, also interesting. But, you know, at this point, so we have a team we've created at KU called the Difficult Airway Response Team. So we have, it coalesces a bunch of providers all at once that can manage, for example, take the patient to the OR for a trach. This is when we call it the DART team. We activated the DART team, you know, because it was like, I don't think this is going to happen. To our provider's credit, they kept going, had apneic oxygenation going. The patient actually did okay. Pass number 3, now it's starting to really look bad and inflamed and worrisome. And, you know, I think appropriately they were kind of moving down the algorithm, but just this is the hope springs eternal thing that I hope. Always kind of talking to my providers and residents about is, you know, you have to move on to something else. So this is a bougie again with a smaller tube coming in. But I don't think it's going to happen, you know. So, but, you know, that continued effort. And I find this, the reason I present this is we all anchor. We have this, like, idea that, like, this should work, therefore it will work. And it's like, that's not necessarily the case, you know. So sometimes it really needs to be like, let's take it out, let's put an eye gel in or a supraglottic, try again, you know, try something else, think about a surgical airway, think about reversal. This is another attempt. This is actually anesthesia came in to assist. So super low, and this is one of the final, possibly the final attempt. Really, 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 I mean, this is looking, yeah, this is, you know, harrowing. This is a pediatric bougie and like a 4-5 tube. I think everybody was like, that's got to go in. So they even like pull the endotracheal tube back to be like, wait, it's in, right? But even by that point, the pediatric bougie wouldn't pass. Patient went to the OR for a trach, got trached. Actually, ironically, saw her in a different ER visit later. She was fine, so thankfully. Second to last year, maybe third to last year, I want to speak about cricoid pressure. So nice midline approach, and then not even sure who, but somebody was like, I'll give you cricoid pressure with kind of uninvited, and so everything's going fine until this very aggressive cricoid pressure. Just like, whew, you know. So when this returns to okay is when my resident was like, take your hand off, please. So, well-intentioned provider, but it's not always helpful. So, oh yeah, this is I think second to last here. So the only time I've ever captured a Minnesota tube being attempted. So this is not actually too much airway. Cardiac arrest. This is one of those. I came in at 6 a.m. and my residents were like, "Oh man, you should hear about this airway." So the endotracheal tube was actually not the part that was interesting. So this is a CMAC blade again. So this is actually posterior to the endotracheal tube. The patient is already intubated, so tons of secretions. Tube is in the glottis. You'll see it kind of flop out of the blade, away from the blade in a second. What's interesting about this case is There's the ventricular tube in place, and kind of a stretched area epiglottic fold. Like it's fine, but you'll see they try to pass a Minnesota tube. That this is like valiant until we kind of face plant, which is we forgot to deflate the balloon. So would have probably been amazing potentially. I mean, the patient was probably going to die anyway, but kind of amazing effort, good initiative, but retrospectively, the balloon was still inflated, so it didn't really pass at all. So we had a whole M&M on it, which was helpful, and then we all discussed how to actually use Minnesota tube, but the conclusion was make sure the balloon is deflated. So this is an angioedema case. This is the CT after intubation. Speaks to why to intubate these guys. Isn't that crazy? Good choice by us. This was my case. I always view this as like, I feel like there's like the walls are caving in. Like, so this is an angulated blade glide scope. I mean, it's just, you can see like, this is ACE inhibitor induced, it was a lisinopril induced. I feel like, you know, our window is just closing in front of our eyes. You know, and fortunately made that choice early. Angulated blade, angulated stylet, and got the airway intubated, managed successfully. Patient got extubated like very briefly, like or soon after, like 24 hours, and did really well. Final case here, all-time great. This was about a year ago, maybe 15 months ago. Anyway, unresponsive, found down, kind of on and off, like, you know, very shocky, maybe arrest. Decided to intubate. This was when he had a pulse. He had, and pre-hospital, did not have a pulse, but regained it. Kind of moving in, and the providers thought, well, that's just a bunch of, like, schmutz. He's been down for a couple days. You know, we'll just clear it out. It's kind of, you know, viscous secretions, aspiration, blood. And then this kind of large mass emerges into the airway, which you can, I mean, we can all, like, feel, like, how this, what this would feel like. You know, you're moving forward, and then this thing, like, mushrooms into your laryngoscope view. And we didn't know anything about him at the time. And so we thought it was maybe like a fungating cancer, a squamous cell. But the resident, to his credit, and just kept after it with the Ducanto suction catheter, just kept going, suctioning. Kept after it while the attending was getting ready for a surgical airway, and then it's gone. Then the rest of the airway is not that hard. Interestingly, I mean, there's big floppy epiglottis, but still, like, it's open. What we found out afterwards was the patient actually was eating his hand, probably starving. We don't know a lot about it, but there was that was a chunk out of the extensor surface of his hand, and he had bitten it off and aspirated it, or covered his glottis with it. So this is where, you know, everyone in this room, you just can't make this stuff up. Like, our job is so unique and bizarre. But the airway ended up being not that hard once we cleared the, you know, soft tissue of his hand out of his airway. So that's it. So appreciate your time.